Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yes!
Paul touches it.
The doctor
goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right, shoots for the win. A three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary.
Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. We get a bounce-back win after a game that may or may not still be a loss, pending league decisions and whatnot. But the Rockets come away with the win against the Raptors way up north, 119-109. And this win felt, honestly, every time I looked at the scoreboard in this game, I felt like the Rockets should be losing. And then consistently I look up and I'm like, okay, we're up 12. Oh, okay, cool. We're up 8. Okay, we're still leading by 10, even though we haven't scored in like 2 minutes. Great. It was one of those types of games where it felt like for stretches of the game, the Raptors were playing better than the Rockets. And then you look at the scoreboard and you're just happily impressed that the Rockets are still ahead in this one. And for the way that the Raptors played in this game, they opted to go with the aggressive double team against James Harden, which we've seen a lot recently, and Raptors opted to go that route. They opted to play essentially 4v3 with the rest of the Rockets after hard trapping James Harden as soon as he crosses the half-court margin. And kudos to the Rockets. All the Rockets role players stepped up in this game, every single one of them. Clint Capella had a bit of a quiet game, and we'll get to him in a moment, but guys like McLemore, Tucker, Daniel House coming back from his illness, and Austin Rivers, those guys all stepped up and played some big minutes in tonight's win. They were critical all throughout the game. McLemore especially, 28 points, a team high, 28 points. 8 of 17 from downtown, 9 of 18 overall. He only shot one other shot that wasn't a three-point shot. So all 17 of his 18 field goal attempts were all three-pointers. And I don't think you could be any happier than that from McLemore. That's a beautiful stat line for him. He did also have 2 points at the charity stripe, came away with a couple rebounds, a few assists, had a steal. Overall, great night from him. James had a really quiet evening. 23 points on just 7 of 11 shooting. He only shot the ball 11 times. And I have a point to make about James Harden only shooting the ball 11 times, and I'll get back to that after I just kind of roll through everybody's stats really quick. But yeah, 7 of 11 from the floor, 3 of 5 from downtown, 6 of 6 from the stripe, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 5 steals. 5 steals. He was in the passing lanes a lot in this game. Had a block. Did have 4 turnovers. A couple of those came off offensive fouls, I believe. In fact, 3 of those may have come from offensive fouls. Plus 7 in this game. Westbrook came away with another triple-double notched in a Rockets jersey. So 19 points, 13 rebounds, 11 assists. Had a couple steals. He did have 8 turnovers. And he also shot just 7 of 27 overall. 0 of 6 from downtown. And I think I've come to a conclusion on Russell Westbrook. I think that in the discussion that I had with Salman Ali, and then in the follow-up discussion after the Spurs loss that Ben and I kind of had back and forth about how will this team fare against the upper echelon opponents, the upper echelon teams in the league, how is Russell Westbrook going to work against these defenses that are apparently poised to continue double-teaming James Harden, where does Westbrook fit in this dynamic? And I think I've finally come to a conclusion on what we're going to see out of him. And it does depend a bit on Eric Gordon. And I know we've talked about that a lot, about how Eric Gordon's absence is severely impacting this team. We're seeing teams kind of play this box and one or kind of weird zone that double teaming of James Harden at the half court line. These things won't necessarily be able to happen or happen as much once you get Eric Gordon back. And I'm going to lay out the reasons why for that in just a moment. Austin Rivers, solid game, always playing great defense, always hustling. Had just 9 points, all of them coming from behind the arc, but he did have 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He was critical in the lineups where Westbrook was sitting as the secondary facilitator with James Harden and with this double team where James would walk it immediately across the half court line and then would have to just get rid of the ball. And James, again, for all the grief that we give him at times about his passing and for all the grief that we give Westbrook about his passing, James was very patient. He would, you know, just gently kind of walk across half court and just gauge what the Raptors were going to do. And the Raptors would, you know, it was usually Fred VanVleet who would come over. And he would wait, and as the double was approaching him, he'd get guys in their spots, he'd start waving people around, and then right before the double would happen, he came away with a clean bounce pass, or he'd toss it over the double team, and he was very precise with his passes. I think there was only one time where the pass was a little lazy out of the double team, and it almost resulted in a turnover. But overall, very clean with the passes out of the double teams, the execution was there, and then Austin Rivers, as the secondary facilitator out of those double teams, played his role to a T. He was patient. There were times where he just took the shot. There were other times where he drove the ball in. There were other times that it was a quick touch pass into the corner to PJ or Daniel House or Ben McLemore. And the ball movement was incredible. By all the Rockets not named James Harden and Russell Westbrook, the ball movement was incredible because at no point did it really ever stop moving until it found the right shot. They executed out of these James Harden double teams beautifully, and that's one of the reasons you came away with this win in such an impressive fashion tonight. You know, this is a surging Raptors team coming to the game 15-5. They were 9-1 at home, and you come into this game, and you come in off of what was kind of a heartbreaking loss against the Spurs. You know, double overtime loss. All your starters played huge minutes. And you come into this game kind of resigned to the fact that you were probably going to lose this game just because the team is exhausted from the Tuesday night double overtime. You're coming in, Daniel House is coming back from his illness. You've got maybe dead legs from Tuesday night. It's a tough travel day because you're going all the way up to Canada. It's just a lot of factors played into where if they had lost this game, you would have been like, you know what? It's fine. It's not fine because it's a loss, but it's fine because of all the variables that play into it. You kind of think, okay, we can deal with this loss because there's a lot of other factors rather than just maybe how they played, you know, the dead legs, the travel, all this stuff. But they went in there and they gutted out a win. And they gutted out a win against a team that used the strategies that have caused the Rockets trouble, especially during that 3-game losing streak against the Nuggets, Clippers, and then the Mavericks. This double team, the reason it was causing them so much trouble is they weren't executing properly out of the double team. And so you have a night where finally the execution is there, the shooting was there. Rockets as a team shot 22 of 55 from downtown, so a flat 40% from behind the arc. It's going to be pretty easy to beat any team in the NBA when you're shooting 40% or higher from behind the arc. But you don't get those good looks unless you're executing the offense properly. And they did just that tonight. So I'll revisit some of the points that I mentioned earlier about Russell Westbrook and his shooting, about Clint Capella and kind of his absence, I guess, or so from this game, and James Harden and his low shooting numbers from this game. And we'll get to that in just one moment. All right, and welcome back into Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. And really quick, before I break into the kind of three topics that I want to cover, the three main topics that I want to cover from this game, or my three main points that I want to break into, I do want to give a lot of credit to the Rockets' defense. They, again, we don't think of the Rockets as a defensive team. We just don't. You know, they're middle of the pack, roughly, and we have high hopes that they can break themselves into the 10 to 15 range as we near the end of the season, because we know at the end of the day they're going to be a good offensive team. That's Mike D'Antoni teams to a T, is great on offense, maybe subpar on defense, barring personnel. But for this team to go up against the Raptors, the surging Raptors, who have only lost one game at home so far this season, and to hold them to 109 points, you know, that maybe not a beautiful number to hold a team to, but you beat them by 10. And there were stretches in this game where offensively you just couldn't buy a basket. So to look up, and I think there was a stretch, it was right there at the end of the third quarter where the Rockets had what it was like a 10-point lead, a double-digit lead of some sort. And I remember looking up thinking, wow, okay, and I know I mentioned this in the first segment that, you know, I looked up at the scoreboard and I thought, oh man, like there goes our lead. And then I'd look up and nope, it's still there because they were forcing the Raptors to miss shots. They were forcing them into uncomfortable shots. James Harden did a commendable job on Pascal Siakam, and so did Daniel House and PJ Tucker when they were the ones guarding him. He was just 9 of 22 from the floor, 2 of 8 from downtown. Overall, the Raptors had a poor shooting evening, 12 of 39 from behind the arc and just 43% from the floor. So the Rockets were contesting shots. They were forcing bad looks in the paint, kind of these hurried layups or hurried shots off the backboard as you're, you know, kind of crashing into the paint, not necessarily clean looks. Now, they did give up some gimmies right at the rim, but that's just bound to happen in any over the course of any 48-minute NBA game. You're going to give up a handful of easy looks. It's about limiting those easy looks and really making the opposing team work for it. So I did just want to give a quick shout-out to the Rockets' defense because I thought overall they did a great job defensively. They weren't many true breakdowns defensively. Again, there were a few lapses where maybe the rotations just didn't happen quick enough, but you kind of attribute that to, you know, good reads by the Raptors on offense versus a true defensive breakdown, because it's not like there were times, I don't think I remember a distinct moment where there was an actual defensive collapse due to, you know, miscommunication between two players or just somebody not being where they're supposed to be or being lazy running back in transition. There were a couple live ball turnovers that did result in points on the other end for the Raptors, but I don't attribute that to lazy defense. That's just sloppy offense that led to a live ball turnover. So apart from those areas, defense in the half court overall, the Rockets did well. And so I just wanted to touch base on that before I dive into my next couple points. So I think I'm going to go big kahuna, James Harden, first. Then we're going to touch on Clint Capella. And then I'm probably going to wrap things up with Westbrook as far as the kind of main points that I want to make from this game about those three guys. So first with James Harden. James Harden, for all the flack that he gets in the media about only caring about his numbers, about being a ball hog, about not wanting to get others involved, about only just dribbling out the shot clock, about all the crap that he gets from Charles Barkley, from Max Kellerman, from Eddie Johnson, just all of them. I will forever just point to the box score of this game and the outcome of this game to tell those guys, look, James does not care. I'll say that again. James does not care about scoring the ball. James only cares about winning. It just so happens that he's really good at scoring the basketball, and putting points on the board usually leads to wins. And because James is pretty darn good at putting points on the board, that's usually how he wills his team to victory. But in a game like this, where he is just facing a double team the entire time, where he, the moment he crosses the half court line, he's got two defenders in his face, he has no qualms about trusting his teammates, about trusting them to execute, to make the right reads, to make the right decisions, and that's all he did tonight. James patiently walked the ball over half court every time and set up the offense by literally not being a part of the offense. That's how James was setting things up tonight. He would cross the half court margin, wait for the double team to initiate, and then that's when the Rockets offense would start, because you would see one of the guys flare across towards the top of the key, right around the free throw line area, and then that's where James would either float the pass over or do a quick bounce pass, and then you've got a guy in the middle of the court, no defender around him, the defense then has to collapse, and then that guy either kicks it out to the three-point line, drives it a little bit further in, maybe looks for a pass to Capella. That was the Rockets' offense, and all of that came off of the gravity of James Harden. So for this game, the next time I see any national media idiot trying to say anything negative about James Harden being a ball hog, not being a true playmaker, not being a team player, not wanting to get his teammates involved, anything of that nature. I'll just point them in the direction of this game where James only shot the ball 11 times. He finished with only 3 assists, but man, did he rack up some hockey assists. I really wish that that was a legitimate statistic in basketball, because James probably had about, 12 of those tonight, just because he would pass, and then the guy that he would pass to would immediately make the pass that led to a shot. That was basically the Rockets' offense all night long. So James quietly, again, we say quiet because 23 points for James is a very quiet night for him, but quietly played his role beautifully in this offense tonight, because that's all he had to do. Walk it across half court and set up the offense and let his gravity do the work. And he still got some of his. He still got his points when he was open, and distinctly there was the one play where Austin Rivers, I forget who it was in the corner, so forgive me there, but somebody had the ball in the corner, passed it to Austin. Austin had what would have been a good wide open three-pointer, and then he passed it to James for a great wide open three-pointer. And immediately afterwards, and this was probably, I think, James's only like second make from downtown, I want to say. He only had 3 on the night and in only 5 attempts, so he shot 60% on the evening. I want to say this was his second three-point make, and he turns immediately to Austin and just, puts his hands together in a thank you and kind of like bows his head a little bit, because, for a guy who's getting double-teamed all night, who loves to score the basketball, again, he also loves to win. His individual stats don't matter to him. But he did turn to Austin. He was like, thank you. I'm glad to have finally actually participated in the offense. And I thought that was a bit comical. And that's just kind of how James is, right? He's our goofy, animated superstar. So, again, James played his role beautifully in this game. There was a bit of a worry there when he got that elbow to the head from Serge Ibaka and had to go back to the locker room. He started Russ at the top of the fourth quarter, and James had to leave, and we were worried about concussion protocol and all that, but he came back in, and he actually came back in earlier than he normally does. I want to say it was around the 9 or 10-minute mark of the fourth to close things out, but luckily he came back, no issues there. And again, great evening from James. He held his poise throughout the entire game, and he fulfilled his side of the execution of the offense, and then all the role players, Tucker, House, Rivers, McLemore especially, all those guys filled in the spots that they needed to fill in and put in an absolutely great showing across the board. Now for the next guy I want to get to in this segment, Clint Capela had a bit of an underwhelming evening. Just 6 points. He did snag 13 rebounds. He had a couple assists. He had a couple steals. He had a block. But overall, I thought that in this matchup specifically against Marc Gasol mainly, I really thought that Clint Capela's vertical spacing could have been used quite a bit more. A handful of Russell Westbrook's 8 turnovers felt like they came in that first quarter, where he was just continually trying to get Capela the ball, and he wasn't doing it in the way that Capela needs the ball given to him. So many times we've seen players throughout these last 2 to 3 seasons not named James Harden try to get Capela the ball, and it's either via like a chest pass or a bounce pass or just something that is low to where other defenders can get their arms on it. We've seen Capela sky above the rim and, grab passes that he has no business grabbing and then yamming them home, or not even dunking them. I think there's an underrated element of Capela's game where he'll catch a pass and maybe he doesn't actually complete the true lob play, but he'll land with it and he'll catch the pass and he'll keep it above his head and then, just lay it in gently, or he'll catch it and lay it in instead of dunking it home, whatever it may be. Capela's got great hands, but you have to put the ball up for him to be able to get it, because if you're trying to bounce pass it to him or dish it off low around his waist, those are passes that are going to get fumbled. And it's not they're going to get fumbled because Capela has bad hands. It's because when you're trying to make those passes in traffic with other defenders and arms around you and bodies flying everywhere, those passes are hard to handle. So I'd really like to see Russ specifically, and again, I don't know why this tandem hasn't developed, or this chemistry between those two guys hasn't. Getting tied up with my words. I don't know why the chemistry between those two guys hasn't developed to this point, because again, you had Russell Westbrook and Steven Adams for years in OKC developing this similar level of chemistry between the 1 and 5 spot, kind of this. Adams isn't as athletic as Capella, so maybe Westbrook needs to get more comfortable throwing legitimate lob passes, and maybe this is something that they can practice, or maybe it's something that the chemistry will build up over time and we'll see more of as the season progresses. But right now we've seen so little of it that I don't even think it's something that they're working on. And Ben and I touched on this a little bit. Maybe more Westbrook Capella pick and roll is how you get Westbrook more comfortable within this offense, get him going downhill a little bit towards the basket. He can shake his defender a little bit easier rather than having to rely on isolation or relying on breaking down his defender all by himself like James Harden usually does. Maybe that's just not Westbrook's forte. That's fine. There's other tools that he can use, like a pick and roll with Capella. And then that also continues getting Capella involved in the offense where, you know, on a night where, again, you've got Capella who's got 6 points. He did have 9 field goal attempts. So he was 3 of 9 from the field, but I feel like a chunk of those just came off offensive boards. He had 4 offensive, he had 9 offensive rebounds. There we go. Only 4 defensive rebounds. And I feel like a handful of those misses just came off of bad putback attempts. I want to say there was one possession where he tried to get that ball back up like 3 times in one possession. So that's 3 misses right there. Overall, he just didn't get the shot attempts that he normally gets. And a lot of that was because they weren't even looking for him. But in an offense where you're playing essentially 4v3 for a majority of the game off of these James Harden double teams, the guys who are catching the ball at the top of the key or at the free throw line as you're splitting the double team with James Harden and forcing the Raptors to scramble to get back to their man, Capella's there. He's in the dunk spot. And all you have to do is get everybody, not just Russ, but everybody, get them comfortable with catching the ball right there at the free throw line, and then not just looking for who the open 3-point shot is, but maybe turning and then making a quick drive into the paint, you know, 1 or 2 dribble forward, and then that frees up Capella to make his hard roll towards the basket. And then all you have to do is lob the ball up in the vicinity of the rim. It doesn't even have to be close to the rim. You put it up there, Capella will go and get it. So that's a wrinkle that I'd really like to see them include to give a bit more, provide another layer, another wrinkle to this countermatch or counterplay of the James Harden double teaming, because we're going to keep seeing it. That's the thing, is the good teams realize that it works to an extent, because maybe we're looking at a night where the Rockets only shoot 30% from downtown, or maybe they have a poor shooting night and they shoot 20% from downtown. If suddenly the Rockets are having a cold shooting night, the Raptors are very much in this game. And so you can't rely on just kicking the ball back out for open 3-pointers, because you're going to have some nights where the shots just aren't falling. And it'd be really nice to make sure that everybody, not just James and Russ, are comfortable throwing these lobs up to Capella, because they're going to be there. Again, if you're playing 4v3 and you catch the ball at the free throw line, the defense has to either commit to you or they have to commit to the shooters. And if they don't commit to you, at least not right away, then that gives you a chance to drive even further in towards the basket. And then somebody, the big, is going to have to commit to you. And then as soon as that happens, you toss the ball up for Capella and it's game over. That's a free 2 points almost every time. So those are my points regarding Capella and Harden in this game. So I'll save the best for last. My stab, man, I don't want to call it a stab in the dark, but I'm going to make a claim about Westbrook's volume shooting and poor efficiency numbers, and I'm going to make this claim right now, early December, and I will be prepared to eat crow about it if it does not pan out this way when Eric Gordon makes his return to the lineup. And we'll touch base on that in just 1 second, so don't go anywhere. All right, and we're back here for the final segment of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. And here I go. Here is my super-duper bold claim, my fiery take on Westbrook and his inefficiency as a Rocket so far. Westbrook absolutely should be blamed for the rushed three-pointers, the rushed long twos that he takes early in the shot clock. Those types of shots will and forever be bad Westbrook shots. Now, I haven't had a chance to go back and watch this game in full, and I really want to because I distinctly remember multiple times in this game where the offense, and this happens with James on the court too, but the difference is James is a phenomenal isolation player. Westbrook is not. So when the offense falters, and this is especially true when Harden is not on the floor, when the offense falters, the Rockets do not have any other players except for Austin Rivers who can truly facilitate their own shot on a consistent basis. And even Rivers is a bit shaky there. Rivers has to completely shake his man and drive all the way to the hole, or he has to do a little jab step dance and then fire up a three. But for the most part, right now, James Harden and Russell Westbrook are the two Rockets who can at any moment generate their own shot. The difference is James Harden generates effective shots, whereas Russell Westbrook generates ineffective shots. Because what Russell Westbrook generates long twos and mid-range twos off the backboard and turnaround jump shots and all these shots that the Rockets historically have liked to eliminate from their offense. It's great when he drives the ball to the rim, but even then, he's missing shots right at the rim. So Russell Westbrook and all his inefficiency, I think, stems from a large part of the fact that the Rockets do not have another player besides those two right now that can consistently generate their own offense. Again, Rivers can do it occasionally, but it also depends on Rivers having his three-point shot on any given night. And he's not a guy who's going to consistently jack up, you know, 8+ three-pointers a game. He did have 8 attempts in the Raptors game. He shot 3 of 8. He had the in the San Antonio Spurs game, he was 5 of 5 from downtown. So he's capable of getting shots up. However, when Eric Gordon returns to the lineup, I foresee Westbrook and his shot attempts dropping significantly. And therefore, I think his efficiency will increase based on Eric Gordon returning to the lineup. And it's not just about these shots that Westbrook isn't going to be taking, because obviously if you put Eric Gordon in the lineup, then everybody's shot volume goes down a little bit. You know, you take some shots off PJ, you take some shots off House, take some shots away from Harden, McLemore, Westbrook. Everybody loses some shots to get Eric Gordon his usual, you know, 10 to 15 shots a game. And that's perfectly acceptable. That's what you want. You want Eric Gordon, your sixth man of the year candidate. Hopefully, when he comes back healthy, he'll be your sixth man of the year candidate. You want him to get the right number of shot attempts per game. So just based off the math alone, there's only so many shots to go around in a given game. Westbrook will have less shot attempts with Eric Gordon on the court. Ideally, the Rockets will be running more plays specifically for Eric Gordon when he returns. So there's that one element. But there's the other element of the fact that right now, if the offense doesn't get the look that it wants, or if Westbrook drives the ball in and generates an open look for somebody and then they don't shoot the ball, the offense has to reset. And what does it reset to? It resets to a Westbrook isolation. And if it resets to a Westbrook isolation, then of course he's going to be forced to take a bad shot, or in his mind, he has to be forced to take a shot that he's comfortable with, but not necessarily an efficient shot. We've seen it for years now where the offense will attempt to generate something, or James will drive the ball in and try to get somebody an open three-pointer, and then he kicks the ball out and the shot's just not there. And then what is the Rockets' offense? James runs back to the top of the key and they reset. And then it's either a James Harden isolation if there's too little time left on the shot clock, or if there's enough time left on the shot clock, then they run another play. They run another pick and roll. They run some type of action to try and get another open look. But oftentimes, especially as of last season and this season, those types of possessions where the initial action doesn't result in a shot, it turns into a James Harden isolation. And that's perfectly fine because James Harden is a phenomenal isolation player. He's the best isolation player in history. That is perfectly fine when James Harden is on the court. But when Russell Westbrook is on the court, who is a horrible isolation player, I think he's scoring like 0.7 points per possession off isolation plays, which is just garbage compared to like James is well over 1 point per possession on isolation plays. When that is what happens, if Westbrook generates a shot and then somebody, whether it's PJ, Rivers, McLemore, House, whoever it is, if Westbrook generates a look for somebody and then they don't shoot it, and then he is forced to then play isolation ball to, you know, generate at least a shot at the end of a possession, those are shots that we can't really fault him for. Like, I'm sorry. If that's what the offense is, if the offense is legitimately, okay, we're going to try and generate a look for somebody, ideally a three-point shot because it's Rockets basketball. If that person, again, PJ, House, McLemore, Rivers, doesn't matter who, if that person does not shoot the wide-open look that they are given, or if the initial action doesn't break down the defense enough to continue moving the ball around the perimeter and trying to find an open look, which it does sometimes. Sometimes the first look's not there, and you got touch pass one, touch pass two, and you pass the ball around, but sometimes the defense recovers too quickly. And then by the time that happens, Westbrook or Harden make their way back out to the top of the arc, and the offense resets. And if the offense resets and there's only 7, 8, 9 seconds left on the shot clock, that's not really enough time to run a second play. So then you are forced to play isolation ball, or you're forced to drive the ball in and take a bad shot. So again, I will reiterate, all of the shots that Westbrook takes that are early in the shot clock, that are ill-advised, those are bad shots, and they always will be. But the shots that he is forced to take because the Rockets legitimately don't have anybody else other than himself to generate offense for the rest of the team, sorry, obviously Harden, but their minutes are staggered, so I'm talking about the Russ-only lineups. In the Russ-only lineups, if the idea is attempt to generate a shot off the initial action, and then if the shot's not there, then Russ has to ISO. If that's what D'Antoni and company are okay with, then I can't really fault Russell Westbrook for that, because that's not his fault. And again, I think that the return of Eric Gordon will definitely help that out quite a bit, because then not only do you have two guys on the court, because Eric Gordon will consistently be paired with one of James Harden or Russell Westbrook. Not only then do you have two guys on the court who can consistently create their own offense, that makes it harder for defenses to load up. That gives Westbrook another shooter to try and target. That gives Westbrook another shooter who isn't afraid to shoot the ball, who has range beyond the three-point line. You know, you think about the times that Westbrook hits somebody in the corner and they have this brief window to shoot. Whether it's, again, Tucker or House or whoever it may be, they have this brief window to shoot and they hesitate for just a second, or they take a dribble, or they just immediately choose that, you know, they see the defender closing out and they're not going to take the shot. Eric Gordon doesn't really hesitate on those ones. Eric Gordon has a very quick trigger finger, and oftentimes Eric isn't parked in the corners. He's parked out on in the slot or at the top of the key, where it's easier for him to get a clean look off because it takes a lot longer for the defense to close out on him when he's further away from the rim. So when you add that weapon into Westbrook's arsenal, I think you're going to see his overall shot attempts go down, and you're also going to see the number of times where he has to be the bailout shooter of a possession go down, which will overall, ideally, increase his efficiency. And that is my bold take on Russell Westbrook. And maybe it's not so bold. Maybe it's kind of pretty simple, honestly, because we've kind of beaten it to death since Westbrook became a Rocket. You know, 20 games in now. Sorry, 21 games in, 14-7 for the team. We've kind of had to talk about it a lot. Westbrook as a Rocket is the biggest headline of this season and how he meshes with this team. And from all the reactions across social media, when we get a win, when we get a loss, there's a lot of overreactionary takes and concerns and whatnot about how legitimate this team is, whether or not they have legit title contender chances or a contender's build, or whether they are a championship caliber team. There we go. That's the best way to put it. And compared to all the other teams in the league presently constructed missing Eric Gordon, it feels like you're missing a piece. It feels like you aren't quite there with the other top dogs of the league with the Bucks, with the Lakers, with the Clippers, maybe now that they have Paul George back healthy. But it's also not fair to rate this team when they're missing one of their arguably your third or fourth best player, because that guy, Eric Gordon, has been your X factor for so long. And I think a lot of Rockets fans are forgetting that right now. You know, he came into the season struggling with the injury, playing well below what we're used to from him, and then he just entirely went away. And so now we've got a team that's been consistently playing pretty solid basketball without their third or fourth best player, and then also missing guys like Daniel House consistently. Clint Capela has missed some time. You've had a couple games where Westbrook has had to sit out. So overall, this team has not had a legitimately healthy roster all year. And yet, they are sitting at 14-7. They've had a handful of impressive wins, albeit you've had some close games against the other upper echelon teams, against the Nuggets, the super close one against the Clippers, and then the Mavericks. But I think that if you had Eric Gordon in those games, if you had a healthy Eric Gordon, the Eric Gordon that the Rockets have had the last few years, I think some of those games probably break a little bit differently. And we could go back and play, you know, oh, we could have done this or should have done this, or if we had had Eric here, whatever. You lost those games, and you can't do anything about that. But what you can do is you can look at this team and you can appreciate what they're trying to do. You can appreciate the chess match that D'Antoni is playing on a nightly basis against opposing coaches, D'Antoni and Harden, against opposing coaches trying to figure out this double team. And for a team that only just started encountering it a few weeks ago, really the Denver Nuggets were the first team to really throw that out there and be really aggressive with it. To turn around and to then expose the Toronto Raptors on a night where a lot of people, Rockets fans included, would have understood if you had lost this game, simply because, again, the long hour or the long flight up north, the long minutes from the double overtime loss against the Spurs, the emotional loss against the Spurs, a game that you were pretty fired up about because of the missed dunk from James Harden and whatnot. So there would have been a lot of reasons to understand a loss in this game. But they came in here and they won, and they executed flawlessly, and everybody played their role well. So Westbrook needs to get away from the volume shooting, and he also needs to be a bit better about turnovers. The turnovers are going to be an issue. Some of the turnovers are just, you look at them and they're head scratchers, like the one that he had where he got the rebound and he just tossed it a little bit too quickly ahead to James, and then Freddie got his hand in there and stole the ball back. It's those where you look at Russ and you're like, dude, if you'd just taken a deep breath for a second before tossing that ball ahead and waited to see where Freddie was going to go, James would have been wide open, no turnover, no three-point bucket on the turn or layup or whatever the Raptors scored on that possession. So some of the turnovers are going to be head-scratchers, but overall, the rebounding that he gives you, the aggression that he gives you, gets you a lot of opportunities. And I don't know if it's truly a tit for tat versus him and Chris Paul and the opportunities that Chris Paul maybe wasn't getting you, but the fact that Chris Paul wasn't turning the ball over as much and was safer with the basketball, definitely a bit more of a reserved play style compared to Westbrook's chaotic level of play. But overall, this team's played well. You got to give them credit. They went in there and got a good win against the Raptors, and now they have to build on it. They've got a relatively easy schedule coming up. I mean, now you've got the Phoenix Suns and Sacramento here in Houston, so back in a little two-game homestand, Saturday and Monday. Then you go on the road for Cleveland and Orlando, so that's relatively four easy wins in a row. And I can't maybe say easy about the Phoenix Suns. They are technically in the playoff race in the West right now, but they've also lost some games to some bad teams. So their hot start that they were off to may have been a fluke. So after Orlando and Cleveland, you come back home for another mini two-game homestand. You get the Pistons and then the Spurs. So that Spurs game on December 16th would be an amazing game to win, especially with how crushing that loss was, depending on how the league decides to play it. And then you get a West Coast swing. You go play the Clippers, then the Suns, then the Kings, and then the Warriors. And of all those teams, the Clippers are the only hard one. So really, the next 10 or so games, 10 to 12 games, are all very winnable, with really the only difficult opponent being the Clippers. So really, you made it through your really tough stretch in November. You're now just 14-7 with a potential to be 15-6, depending on what the league says about the Spurs game. And you've got a stretch of games here, the next 10 to 12 games, that are all really easy. So if you win out in November, or not November, I apologize, if you win out in December, and then you get Eric Gordon back at the end of that, and get the rust knocked off him, and then you come back, and really the next big game, you've got the Denver Nuggets at the very end of December, December 31st, New Year's Eve. And then after that, you've got a handful of more, you know, so-so teams. You got the Sixers in there, but they've had a, you know, back-and-forth season kind of so far. But the real test, the first real test for this team, the Lakers, January 18th. Eric Gordon back healthy, has a couple weeks to knock the rust off. Ideally, the entire rest of the roster is going to be healthy. That right there, everybody needs to circle that date on their calendar. January 18th in Houston, that game will be the true first test for this team. Again, we've seen flashes of brilliance from this team, but we also haven't seen a fully healthy version of this team. And ideally, fingers crossed, knock on wood, that will be the game where we get all of those things in one and get a true picture of what this team will look like down the line. So I think that's where I'll leave things off for today. This, what is it? Oh, it's almost midnight. So I'll call it Friday, December 6th, seeing as how it's a couple minutes past midnight. As always, thank you for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there, at JT Gatlin, and of course the show's on there, at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website, LockedOnRockets.com, and of course our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, you can make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you to reach out and let us know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Also, I'm going to go on a quick tangent as I'm doing my little end of pod wrap-up. I did post a poll on Twitter the other day because I'd like to start doing a mailbag segment for the podcast, and I wanted to get a bit of input from you guys as to whether or not we wanted to do that on a Monday mailbag segment or if we wanted to do a midweek mailbag segment where I answer the questions maybe on like a Wednesday or a Thursday pod, whereas the Monday mailbag would obviously be answered on a Monday podcast. So if you guys aren't on Twitter, which I know there's a lot of people that aren't on Twitter, if you guys aren't on there, you guys can email in to lockedonrockets@gmail.com, or you can post on the Facebook, and I will see and tally all those answers as well, because I care about all of your opinions. I don't care about just the Twitter people. I am on Twitter significantly more than I am on Facebook, but I care about everybody's opinion. So if you want to voice your opinion about when you'd like to listen to the mailbag segments or how you'd like to answer those questions, then please reach out, let me know what your opinion is, because I'd like to start getting that thing off the ground probably in the next week or so. You know, start getting some of y'all's questions in here, answering them, that kind of thing. So just reach out, give me your opinion, and we'll take it from there. Now, beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that go straight to your inbox before they show up on the previously mentioned social media outlets like Facebook and Twitter. And then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this very early Friday, December 6th, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you back again very, very soon, right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.